You're listening to DraftKings Network.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's not about the crime you commit. The question is, who do you commit the crime against?
Oh.
If I lie to my friend, there will be no repercussions. If you lie to your parents, you may get grounded. If you lie in the court of law, you will go to jail. It's the same crime, a lie, but who are you committing the crime against? That is what dictates the severity of the punishment. John Gruden.
What's up?
Who he commit the crime against that got him punished this severely?
What you talking about?
Because it wasn't when he said that D. Maurice Smith, the black man, he called him Dumb Morris Smith, and had lips the size of Michelin tires. We kind of moved past that one pretty quickly.
He coached after that.
Coached the game after, whole game after that.
The whole
Sunday.
Game.
Entire
he didn't
game.
Coach well.
All 60
he
minutes,
coached
he coached
game.
After that.
Hmm.
It wasn't for him sending the topless pictures of the Washington cheerleaders to the old Washington president. It wasn't that, because people have unfortunately mistreated women and gotten away with it for far too long in society. I just remember, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
All right, that was Emmanuel Acho on FS1, and I am now joined by my fellow Meadowlarkers, Amin El-Hassan, Tom Haberstroh, and Howard Bryant. I'm Kate Fagan. We're here today to talk about everything that has come out of these NFL email leaks, including John Gruden and Adam Schefter. Amin, I want to toss it to you first. After listening to that sound from Emmanuel on FS1, what was your reaction?
I hadn't thought about it, to be honest, in the context that what happened to John Gruden in terms of sanction or pressure to step down was a result of the escalation of this trail of emails that started with some garden variety racism, God hunting, misogyny, and homophobia. But apparently the biggest phobe you can not be is commissioner phobic, right? The Shields phobic. And that's where the buck stopped. I hadn't thought about it in that regard. I don't know if I agree. It's an interesting theory, but, and maybe I'm uninformed on this, but the impression that I get is that Roger Goodell is not a figure who rules through fear. He's not David Stern, I guess is what I'm saying. If this is David Stern, I say absolutely. That's why the guy lost his job. You can be the racist owner of a team and have your players ogled at your house parties, but you can't cross David Stern. I don't get that vibe about Goodell. I've always thought of him as kind of more of a lackey of the owners, an employee of the owners. True, what a commissioner should be, right? He represents the interests of ownership. And I think Goodell does that. He takes a lot of bullets on behalf of the owners. I just don't see him being the one who has either the power, the influence, or the wherewithal to force a John Gruden out. And so for me, it's still kind of the content of the emails in an aggregate of all the things that he said. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think, because I had never thought about that theory.
Well, there's so much context we're still missing. Before we get specifically to Gruden, just 650,000 emails supposedly uncovered, this trove of emails, and we are now privy to something like 20 to 30 of them. And the ones we're privy to, we don't know why we're privy just to those emails. And that's a huge piece of context that we're missing.
I mean, when you look at this 650,000 emails that the NFL has as part of their investigation into Dan Snyder's organization, the Washington football team, this is not even like 1%, right? Like, what I think about in this story is, if the NFL was behind this leak, which I think it's pretty fair, it's reasonable to think that the NFL was behind this leak, they clearly had a John Gruden file, right? The John Gruden file that they were going to dump out. And from my perspective, it looks like they just essentially said, we're going to force the Raiders' hand here. We're going to drop this little trinket here and see if they're actually, if Mark Davis was going to actually fire John Gruden. Because if you don't fire John Gruden, we got this whole nother thing coming. And I'm curious, like, if that was the mentality or if that was the strategy, then they had to have selected the D. Smith comment, right? They have to have been like, this is going to be the first one we're going to leak out, as opposed to the other ones. And I think thinking about that on what would get him fired first, so we don't have to go through the entire gamut of comments, is that the most inflammable comment in there? Like, I don't know. I don't know why the NFL or whoever's behind these leaks, I'm just going to caveat that now just to be safe here. Why did they release that one and then hold back the others?
Oh, man. Let me just say, one, based on the reaction, I'm not judging, but I'm just saying, based on the reaction, no, the D'Amore Smith one wasn't the most inflammatory one. And two, I'm with you, Tom. This is what they want us to look at. What are they telling us to look away from? If he's the sacrifice, if he's the one they throw out there, who's in this very narrow, by the way, channel? Because we're just talking about Washington football team emails. I'm not talking about league-wide emails. So in this lane of a sliver of one of 32 ends of communication, this is what they want us to focus on. Because as you said, they chose to leak this and leak that.
Well, how much of this is just how much power John Gruden has? Is that when he wasn't immediately fired, if this was a first-year head coach who just got the job this season and he was caught using those words, those comments about D. Smith, he's gone, right? Like, the players in that locker room, it's not just like, hey, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, which is a big part of this story. It's also how much power John Gruden has, not just in their career, but for the rest of time in the NFL. Like, John Gruden, when he signed his 10-year, $100 million contract, he was the second highest paid NFL personnel in the NFL, just behind Roger Goodell. The second most guaranteed money in the NFL. And if you're going to come out and say he deserves to be fired, I'm not going to play for this man, I think there are repercussions beyond just I might get cut from this team or I might not play again. Like, I think that is such a big part of this story, is that John Gruden was not fired for the initial comments because he's John Gruden. If he's not the top face of the organization, of the NFL, where is he? Top three? Bill Belichick? Like, how much higher can you get than John Gruden? And that is such a huge power dynamic that I think is the backdrop for why he was not fired, or why Mark Davis was okay with this. It wasn't a fireable offense the first time, and why the players did not speak out in order to get him fired.
Well, it's been a week. I mean, there's that. I mean, it's not, I mean, to me, one of the things that we always talk about with where we are is the dots that connect. I mean, it's not just Gruden. If you want to talk about Gruden, sure, let's concentrate on Gruden for now. Sure, he has an enormous amount of power. And absolutely, he has a level of influence that makes him, he has a lot more protection than Brian Flores, let's just say that. But at the same time, I think that it's important to remember that there is an enormous level of acceptable anti-blackness in this country. And that is the number one first thing, because that was the first shoe that dropped here. And that was your one-off. And it wasn't representative of his character. And the PR folks got all around it. Why? Because you can shit on black people whenever you want. It is the baseline here. Let's just not forget that, right? And so because it's the baseline, he got to continue on. He got to stay on. And people weren't even saying, when they were talking about the emails, what I wanted to know when I was looking at these emails wasn't the great giant conspiracy of who leaked it. I don't know who leaked it. I really would like to concentrate on what we know. We don't know where this is coming from. We don't know what cost John Gruden his job, because Mark Davis didn't even want to fire him. This didn't even come from Mark Davis.
Right. He stepped down.
You know, Gruden resigned before he even probably spoke to Mark Davis. This was a done deal. He was finished. What I was interested in that was the casual, acceptable racism that goes on, because let's not forget that this is the baseline of this industry. When we talk about systems and you're talking about all these other things, and let's not forget, you still have the race norming stuff from last month in the NFL. So this is how they're talking. This is the foundation. What I want to know in those 650,000 emails is, did anybody in those emails see the John Gruden chain and say, hey, John, that's kind of fucked up. You know, John, maybe you shouldn't do that. Or, hey, John, what? This is how they talk. This is how they operate. This is the industry. And you have to sit and take it. And everybody has to sit and take it. right? While they sit and laugh at Eric Bieniemy and they sit and laugh at the Fritz Pollard Alliance and the whole thing. This is what you're up against. And anybody who says anything about it is not going to find themselves employed for very long. So that's the first thing. Then you start moving into the other stuff as the shoes start to drop. And obviously, you drop those slurs on the commissioner and your days are probably numbered anyway. But I think the first thing to consider is the baseline of anti-blackness that we all have to deal with, have to accept. He was going to survive this if he didn't, if there was no extra. He was going to survive it. And yet people want to say to you that you're the one who's always going overboard when we're talking about these issues. This is why people don't advance.
A couple of things. What you mentioned about no one responded to, hey, kind of fucked up what you said there. You instantly took me back, Howard, to the Danny Ferry recordings of that scouting meeting where they read an intel report about Luol Deng and said, he's like the African who sells you something and is doing something basically shady in the back. And I remember at the time, because at first it was just a report, and then they played the tape of the, because it was a conference call, and it was not just Danny Ferry, it was the assistant GM, it was scouts, and it was ownership on the phone while they're all in the conference room. And the thing that jumped out to me is that, A, Danny didn't couch his language at all. Now, this is just the words of the scout. I'm just reading a report. He read it like he said, likes to go left. Very matter-of-factly, there's nothing untoward about this. And nobody audibly winced or said, ooh, and given that you're talking to ownership, I would have thought there would have been someone who jumped up and say, by the way, whoever it was that was on the team at the time, yeah, this is just a report or just something. I'm not even saying you have to refute the spirit of it, which is fake hustle or whatever they were trying to convey. But you gotta at least separate yourself from this language. And they didn't do that. And again, given that it's a work setting, these aren't your buddies. This isn't guys over a beer or whatever. You would think doubly so because of the implication of, hey, I could get in trouble for this, lose my job, lose my livelihood. I want to make sure it's very clear that this is not me or how I feel. The other part, and this is the part where it gets really, really delicate and complicated, and yet it feels relevant. Because Dave Chappelle a week ago said on his special pretty much what we just said, which is there is a level of anti-blackness that is acceptable that doesn't necessarily apply to other persecuted groups. And people try to call it, grief Olympics or whatever. But Dave's point always from the beginning, I felt, was never anti any one of these other persecuted groups. It was a discussion of what white people will tolerate and what they won't. Like their tolerance level for anti-black language is a lot higher at this point in history than anti any other persecuted group.
Yeah.
And the whys behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it, like when I was saying, it's been a week, right? I mean, let's take the amalgam here. What we're supposed to do is see how all the dots connect. You've got Dave Chappelle, you've got Katie Couric, you've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and John Gruden and the NFL all colliding in one place. And to Chappelle's point, did everybody see the special, The Closer?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. And Sticks and Stones before that, right? Dave Chappelle is brilliant and he's a genius. And there's no question about that in my mind. He's got the oratorical skills. He's got the rhetorical skills. He makes his point. He takes you to places where you may not have thought. Dave Chappelle failed. That special is horrible. It is horrible. And here's why it's horrible. And what makes it even more horrible was that the point that he's making, the kernel of the point is actually relevant to this conversation, to your point. I mean, it's exactly right. that white people can check in and check out of their racism whenever they want. And that, and that is sort of the point he was trying to get at. But the thing that I saw when I was watching that was here was somebody who did not support black people if they were trans or if they were gay. He wasn't an ally to them. What he did in there was he tried to sound like he was pro-black, but he's a homophobe. And what bothered me about that is that Dave Chappelle is usually
such a wonderful offensive comedian. And what I mean by offensive is that he's making a point and he's taking you along on this journey and you'll laugh even if you're uncomfortable. All of the things, he'll take you along because of his brilliance. But this sounded like payback. That whole special sounded like he sat there and he watched the reaction to Sticks and Stones, mm-hmm. and he was taking his pound of revenge on people. And it was the most defensive I've ever seen Chappelle, where it was like, I'm going to read the comments for 2 weeks and come back at you. Mm-hmm. That's what it sounded like to me.
It felt like that. It did feel like that at times.
And that wasn't brilliant. And here's the worst. Here is the biggest sin. The shit wasn't funny, right? It was like, the world is, you know, some of it was funny. I mean, I had my moments where I laughed because he's Chappelle, but the kernel of what he was talking about and the root of what he was talking about, he was crushing the trans community and the gay community. And he went back and doubled and tripled and quadrupled and shit just wasn't funny. And the other thing about it, I mean, I'm going to stop it, but the other thing about it too, was that he never picked anybody up. You can make the argument that he made, and I agree with some of that argument, that yes, mm-hmm. white people can check in and check out whenever they want. And if those emails of John Gruden don't come back with the other stuff, mm-hmm. Does he survive this? Just crushing Demora Smith? 100% he does.
He's at practice right now.
And everybody's allowing this to happen because, like I said, you can shit on black people whenever you want, right? And not only can you do that, but when you do that, people will immediately rush to your defense and tell you why this is not your character. But this is exactly where I also saw, you know, reading the Katie Couric stuff. I'm looking at that and I'm thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. wait a minute. So Katie Couric comes out and says that RBG, you know, and then this brings us back to Kaepernick. You know, when you're talking about the weight of the entire federal government coming down on him from the president, now you got the Supreme Court coming down on him when she said that back in 2017. And this is more of a Couric Schefter thing journalistically, right? What are you doing? What are you doing?
I'll tell you what Katie Couric was doing. She was playing Commissioner Gordon to RBG's Harvey Dent.
Mm-hmm. And to me, like, this is the thing that Kate, when we were talking about in the last show, when we were talking about the limits of allyship, and people have taken RBG and presented her as this. And it's never not offended me that her, you know, her rebrand has come from a black hip hop dude, right? And she is this beacon of white womanhood and essentially was saying, be grateful for what you have. And that the journalist was willing to protect that. And we're supposed to ride along when she's punching you in the face too, at a time when there's real sanction against anybody who is taking a stand against policing. And so because she's one of the chosen ones, because she may stand on the right side of issues, and because now little kids are, you know, all the good progressive white women are out there dressing up their little kids in Halloween and RBG mm-hmm. gear, that now that she's exempt, she's being protected too, that these institutions protect each other.
I'm trying to pull up the exact quotes that were eliminated for the listeners who aren't familiar with this story. Basically, Katie Couric had a sit down with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the former Supreme Court justice who passed away recently. And it was a wide-ranging interview, but apparently Katie Couric left out some of the more explosive remarks that were made.
But put them in her book.
But put them in her book. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I mean, there's some to this story where Katie Couric has a memoir coming out, and there's a lot in her book that is meant to be fodder for social media and to sell books. The thing that I found interesting, aside from what both Howard and Amin you're talking about with RBG and certainly Howard with the rebranding, the kind of hip hop rebranding, is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg in 2016 had already apologized for making anti-Kaepernick statements. So the Katie Couric interview, enough was released in it that she was clearly condemning Kaepernick and other kneeling players during the national anthem, and she had apologized for it in 2016. So some of it is confusing to me now. That, and this obviously can happen very easily in our culture these days, where it's as if this is new news to people that RBG had spoken ill of, had said this. Mm-hmm. And now it's as if the whole left wing conspiracy was to like keep these opinions of RBG's closeted when they were out in the open.
They're already out there. And to me, what the reason why I'm connecting these dots is because my point on this is the baseline of anti-blackness, that all of this, this is the root. And this is the acceptable root, right? Whether you're her, whether you're Gruden, whatever, right? And that this is what you're expected to carry. And this is what you're expected to carry. You are constantly being gaslit that it's not what it is. It's exactly what it looks like, 100%. Now, if we're going to go to the next step and take all of these different things and say, okay, you know, to Chappelle's point, right, that the only reason, I mean, you know, his point, his larger point essentially is that, and he's not talking about Gruden, but the point applies, that Gruden got fired because he was talking about the gay community. That's what really got him fired. And that in that community, you know, if he's placing it as a white community, can check in and out of whiteness whenever they want, right? That's his point. I don't know what got John Gruden fired, because once again, we don't know that piece of information. To me, you know, to your point earlier about whether or not, you know, Goodell is the vindictive guy, you know, two things also hit me there. One, those emails released are going to get you fired, point blank. They're going to get you fired. You can ascribe whatever one is the one that pushes you off the plank. They're going to get you fired. And also, you make a lot of enemies when you have a 10-year, $100 million guaranteed job as a coach. There's a lot of people who want to see you fall. And if we heard what Keyshawn Johnson said, calling him a fraud and the whole thing, you know, to me, this is tip of the iceberg stuff. And I feel like Kate hasn't really spoken. She's sitting back just waiting to like take a fastball and turn on it. But I feel like there's so much of this, like into Tom's point as well, that it's almost like misdirection. We want you to look over here because there's more there. I don't know, because it's just so early. We just have to wait and see how this plays out. But the baseline, this is Al Campanis all over again. Back in the 80s. Well, you know, how come blacks aren't good swimmers? They lack the buoyancy. They lack the necessities. This is the industry talking. It's the industry talking when John Gruden talks. It's the industry talking when the rest of the email chain lets him talk.
Friends, a lot has changed over the years, personally and across our airwaves. But one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. You know, for me personally, I recently bought a few six packs of Miller Lite for my housewarming party, because that's one thing that's changed for me. I moved into a new house and I brought some friends over and we enjoyed the best light beer, because Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. Less filling and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
When I'm reading these Gruden emails and thinking about the impact and what I think it represents, where I continually found myself leaning toward is this concept of generational trauma that exists in sports, that I think specifically and potently exists in football. And by generational trauma, I mean coaches passing down from generation to generation their own trauma of having been grown up in a certain sport and the way that they were coached or treated in that specific sport. And I think often of, like, when I was at Colorado, I remember hearing about the football team being forced to, in the early morning, to forward roll until someone vomited, right? Like, this was punishment for something. The team had to forward roll until someone's vomiting. Like, to just me, one? This is just one person vomiting, right? That was the trigger. 10% of the team must vomit. So I think about a lot that someone like John Gruden, who we see a glimpse of the words they're willing to use in emails. We don't have on Monday Night Football, the 7 years he was on Monday Night Football, or any other video footage of his insides on the outside. But I do think a lot about the energy and the climate within football and within sports, where John Gruden, who has been in football for 30 plus, however many years, 40 plus, the energy that he is passing on to his players and to the next generation of coaches is infused with so much of what you read in those emails. And so I think there is a part of this conversation that is about what is football about? And if we're asking this question of why did we learn John Gruden's emails, I think to myself, okay, so he might be the sacrificial lamb. And I don't mean that he's an innocent lamb, but maybe he's the sacrificial lamb. So it's a John Gruden problem rather than, wow, 30% of the emails we looked at had some form of racism, homophobia. I mean, that would be an insanely
high
percentage.
Well, but that's what we percentage. Do. You know, yes. But that's what we do. We will focus on the bad apple and leave the institution intact. That's what we do. We find who's got to go. Donald Sterling's got to go. Donald Sterling's gone. So we're good now, right? John Gruden's gone. So John Gruden's got to go. So now we're good, right? I mean, this is how this country works, because the institutions are never to be introspective or reflective enough to reach the sort of change in that, you know, the types of change that we're talking about. And I think that, because I think most people don't really want that change. And, you know, I was talking to Bomani about this not too long ago, and we were talking about Ben Simmons, and we were talking about language and the language of sports. To your point, Kate, the language of sports isn't really homophobic, you know, just like in the military, just like all of it. Come on, ladies, let's go, right? It's misogynist. It's homophobic. This is what it is. And the question is going to be, how can you create something new if the language stays the same? And do you want to create something new? This, you know, these types of concepts about strength and weakness and all of this, and who's, you know, they're all tied into the slurs, right? This is the shorthand for this business, for all of these businesses. It's actually the shorthand for the culture in general, even when you get out of sports.
The fascinating thing for me is it's not limited to men's sports. Like, I don't know if people realize in the WNBA, at least up to last time I worked there was a decade and a half ago or so, but that language was there too.
That's the language of sports. That's
the language of sports. It's not even the language of men's sports. Like, you have women using this language in that derogatory.
Well, they're not creating. I mean, this is the one thing I always talk about when it comes to movies, right? As much as I, you know, believe in representation, and as much as I believe in all of these different concepts, is it really progress, except for the individual who gets the job? Because we are talking about careers here, and we're talking about money and wealth and all those other things. But if you essentially take Iron Man and make Iron Man a woman, but you're telling the exact same stories with the exact same language, with the exact same outcomes, is that really progress, except for the person who got the gig, right? I mean, you're telling you're reinforcing the same culture. The only difference in the culture is that now you get to be a little bit more of
the
a
ambassador.
Part of it. You get the to be the ambassador. Or you get to be rich. You get to be, you get to play along. You get to be part of it in a way that you weren't part of it before, because your position or those roles were not available to you. So why wouldn't the WNBA copy the NBA and copy sports? This is the template, right? I mean, go talk to any woman who is climbing in corporate America. You're following the boys. You become one of them.
I was rewatching Love and Basketball a couple of weeks ago, and there was a moment, one specific
Terrible
moment
movie.
Stood out to me. It's awful.
Phobe.
Anybody who trashes Love and Basketball, they've got issues. But so there's a moment in the first quarter of the movie where on her bedroom wall was Cheryl Miller. This stood out to me because I know hundreds of women's basketball players, and I know not a one who grew up with a women's poster on her wall. To the point we're making about the culture of sports is men's sports. Every women's basketball player I know had posters of Kobe, Steph Curry, you know, if we're going back far enough, Patrick Ewing and Jordan. And so this culture of sports, it's set by the NBA and the NFL. And one interesting anecdote that I think relates to Gruden here is, like, I've gone and spoken on to a lot of athletic departments because of the book, What Made Maddie Run. And I'd say like 30 to 40 of them. Every school I speak to that has a football team, and the event is mandatory, it is not mandatory for the football team. And there's a different set of rules, and the football team does not need to come to the event. And if they do, they sit in the back and they fuck around the whole time, which is difficult to stomach, not because I'm trying to make a point, but because I know more than any other sport, football needs the conversation of the language that is used with them, the impact on their mental health, the impact of being a football player in America. More than anything, there needs to be fresh air. That's not to say I don't adore the teamwork of football and, you know, the culture of leading men in the best possible way it could be used, as opposed to the way that when someone says someone's a leader of men, I kind of cringe, because I'm like, a leader of men seems very different to me than just a leader. But yeah. John Gruden, to me, embodies this idea.
I mean, what is this all about, right? That the, whether it's John Gruden or whomever it is, they're all looking for the next Charles Barkley, right? They're looking for the next John Madden. And they saw Gruden as that guy, you know, who could relate on a certain way that people would be like, yeah, he's entertaining. And now you see the face behind the mask, right? They're trying to find, everyone's trying to find who that star ambassador of your sport is going to be. And Gruden looked like, you know, whether it was the Chucky stuff, whether it was the fact that he, you know, that you had Frank Caliendo out there doing impersonations of John Gruden.
He's the star.
He's the embodiment of what a real football man is all about, right? So they're trying to create a character here. And now it's blown up in everyone's face. And now if you go talk to people off the record, if you talk to people at ESPN off the record, if you talk to people in the NFL, they'll all tell you, yeah, we know this is who he was.
Right? Not according to Mike Tirico and Tony.
But Mike Tirico don't even say he's black. So I won't listen to Mike Tirico.
Yeah, that's true. No, Keyshawn has been saying this.
Keyshawn called
for years.
Him out. Where
for
he
years,
needed to
though.
Be for
I've been
years.
I've been on Keyshawn's radio show in LA when he was in LA, and we talked about it on air. It wasn't even kind of a behind the scenes hush hush thing. So that guy's a fraud. Like from forever, he's always been like, that guy's a fraud. That's why people are like, oh, now everyone's coming out the woodwork. Well, like, the only person I know for a fact has been calling the guy a fraud was Keyshawn, because he did it on air. So that's the part of me that's like, I'm not surprised.
Oh my gosh, folks. Gather around. Everyone, gather around. Listen to these words. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers, listen to me. You bet just $5 to get 150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code Dan. That's code Dan for new customers. And you get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's insane. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One other storyline coming out of this trove of emails was the release of an Adam Schefter email in which he sent an entire story to the president of the Washington football team, and with bylines and everything, an ESPN story. Before we weigh in on that, I wanted to play a little bit of audio from Sally Jenkins on the Dan Le Batard Show.
If you feel conflicted, that's a conflict. You know, if you're trying to define what a conflict is, it's if you feel conflicted in your duties, if you're inclined to pull a punch. And so, you know, that's where I would start broadly. And then more specifically, you know, Adam Schefter's a great reporter. He gets a lot of stuff. He really does. And his sources have a lot of trust in him. And it's a very fine line that he walks there. I can understand the impulse to let someone like Bruce Allen, who's in a position to have information, look over something you're writing for the sake of accuracy. But to let him edit it or to show him the whole thing, that's something I would not have done, to just turn over an entire piece to somebody. I don't think that that is really what my bosses would expect of me. And so I would not do it. But I think all of us have certainly shown wording to other people to make sure that we're right, that we're accurate, that we're not warping something or overstating something.
So, Amin, there's a couple things when it comes to this Schefter stuff. One, is there a specific reason why Adam Schefter's email was leaked, or is it just a collateral damage kind of tidbit thrown to the sharks? And two, what was your reaction when you heard Schefter had done this?
Well, I mean, it goes the same as our conversation about the Gruden emails. There's 650,000 emails. I'm sure that those aren't the only five that are, you know, bad, and everything else was just, hey, lunch at two, is that okay? Question mark. There's always a reason why. It's in the same way, there's always a reason why news is leaked. We hear that so-and-so, we hear that Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs have a rift, and the Spurs players try to pressure him to play and he wouldn't. And that's not in a vacuum. These things are leaked for a purpose. You take a news story, you say, okay, regardless of, we're always going to assume the veracity if it comes from a reputable source, that they're not making up news. Okay, who looks bad in this? All right, then I'll tell you who leaked it. It wasn't the guy who looks bad. Right? It's not Shefty that was leaking this. Hey, by the way, emails are coming out. One of them's mine. He's not doing that. It's someone else who has either an axe to grind or has felt wronged by him or whatever. That's kind of, you know, you tell who leaked it, that's the answer. Deeper than that, though, to me is one of the things where I'm surprised that people are surprised.
Really?
Yeah. Howard, do you think the newsbreakers, the big time newsbreakers in our industry, are there with trench coats and deep hats and talking to the shoe shine boy who heard the GM on the phone mm-hmm. talking about how much he likes them? No. These people are in relationships
yep.
with front offices, with agents, and the thirst for the immediacy, right? The thirst to be first on Twitter trumps all of the other journalistic integrities.
Maybe.
I've heard stories. I'm not saying everybody, but
good, because then you'd be talking about me, and that's bullshit, because I'm listening to this and I'm saying to myself, and Tom, you're a reporter, been on a beat for a long time. What he did is not what we do, right? It's not what yep. we do. Now, in that position, that may be what they do.
Right.
You know, because
when you get to that level of
this is how this is my question. All three of you guys have written and have sources and all that stuff. How many of you guys feverishly ran to your laptop to be the first to say that he got traded? You guys don't do that because you guys engage in journalism as we've known it for decades. And right now we have this thing that we call
but
journalism.
So is Adam Schefter.
This thing
Adam
that
Schefter
we call news. But that's not the sandbox he plays in anymore. He plays in a different sandbox. The sandbox where being first on Twitter matters. We're having transactions before 3 seconds before the next. That matters to these
True,
people. And it matters to the news organizations that pay them. And that begins to warp and corrupt the whole thing. They all might have started out with gumshoes and full hearts and big eyes, right? But at some point,
I don't consider myself a Pollyanna on this. You know what I mean? I'm not looking at this going, oh my goodness, why can't we go back to the old days? They did the same shit in the old days, right? They didn't email stuff back then, but what we're
volume.
Talking about is, and the competition was just as fierce back then because you had 10 newspapers in one town and you had morning papers and you had afternoon papers. Competition has always been competition. What we're really talking about here is power. We're talking about who gets to control narratives. And what do they always tell us, right? The players come and go, but the front office is always going to be there, right? So you're making a decision of who you're going to align yourself with power-wise. I have read many stories over the phone. I have told them, you know, and if you're a good source of mine, I have one rule. You will not be blindsided by me, because this is a business of relationships. And I can't, because the next day I can't have my sources call me going, damn, how could you do me like that? Right. So I can call you. I will call you and I will say, Kate Fagan said this, 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 and this. These are the quotes that are said. Do you have a comment? I will say, you know, when I was covering technology at the San Jose Mercury News, I was way over my head because we were covering incredibly dense stuff before I got into sports, you know, covering the wave of PCs into the home, right? Trying to explain to the general public what networking is, like what bandwidth is, what upstream and downstream is, all that stuff. really complex stuff. So sometimes you would call somebody at 3Com, or you'd call somebody at Cisco, you'd call, you know, somebody over at Apple, and you would say, hey, can I read this to you? Does this make sense? Sending an entire story over to be edited is not what we do. And the only way you do that, go ahead, Tom, I was going to say, the only way you do that is when you know that there are certain people in the business you need to curry favor with. I guarantee you he's not sending that stuff to DeMora Smith. How many times are you sending that stuff to the union? Power protects power. Whiteness protects whiteness, right? Gender protects gender, right? All of these things, race, class, gender cannot be separated. That's why they can all yuck it up on this stuff. And this is why these things are so damaging.
What stood out to me, Howard, was not that he gave the full article to him.
He called him editor.
Called Mr. him Mr. Editor.
Editor. Mr. Editor.
Mr. And editor speaks to something I think which is different. Because I look, I'm same thing with you with the tech side. Is covering player health, I'll talk to surgeons, I'll talk to biomechanic, you know, PhDs, and I'm like, I don't know if this is right, so I'll send a paragraph over to a source who I'm quoting. I'm like, am I getting this right? Because it does take a literal, like, a PhD to understand all of the mechanics here, right? It's an entirely different thing when you're saying Mr. Editor. And I will say Schefter did issue a comment, and I don't know if it's an apology, but a statement. But he did not mention the Mr. Editor part. He apologized for handing over the entire article and saying you can edit whatever you see fit. So I want to take it back to the John Gruden email chain, which was populated by John Gruden, Bruce Allen, the president of the Washington football team, Ed Drost, the co-founder of Hooters, okay, who was famous for coming up with the idea that a local bikini contest could drive up the sales of their chicken wings, okay? He is the man behind that. Genius, right? The co-founder of Hooters, I can't get over the fact of the people that are on this email chain, which is the C-level suite of America, right? So Tampa's C-level suites of businessmen. Ed Drost, the co-founder of Hooters. Jim McVay, yes, the same McVay of Sean McVay, the coach of the Rams. He is the executive who runs the Outback Bowl, who makes $1 million a year for putting on one game a year. He makes $1 million a year as the executive behind the Outback Bowl. Then there's Nick Reeder, who's the former CFO of the Bucks, the youngest CFO in the NFL at the time. He also, in one of the stories that I read, he's contributing to John Gruden's foundation. Do you know what John Gruden's foundation is that appears to be defunct now? Like the website doesn't
exist? Spider-Y Banana.
The FFCA. Do you know what the FFCA stands for? The Fired Football Coaches of America. That's John Gruden's foundation. So
they need
these,
help too.
These men are circulating these emails and feeling a comfort zone in the same way that Schefter feels comfortable sending this to the president of one of the football teams, calling him Mr. Editor. They're all white.
Yeah.
And all have a lot of money.
This kind of ties back to the NWSL story last week. Like, if we want to understand why white coaches get hired and fired and rehired and rehired and rehired, it is that email right there. That happens, because that is a level of involvement that I'll speak to myself as like a former beat writer of the 76ers as a woman. I couldn't be in the room where it happened most of the time because I can't go out to drinks with guys at night, right? Like, I can't do that. And I think people need to also wonder, like, just to clarify, like, what does Adam Schefter get out of sending Bruce Allen this email?
Access.
Accuracy, Kate.
No.
Sure. Do you know how many, I would say dozens of times, I'm sure this has happened to all of us here, people that I want to help with a story, interview, be a source on something, ask at the outset, can I see the story before you publish it?
No.
And that is a condition of their involvement. And I say, no, you can't. And you lose oftentimes their involvement. You lose access to them. Just to clarify for listeners, like, but if you say, yes, you can have final proof and make sure that however you're included, it adds up to exactly how you want yourself to look to the public, I will give you that power. Getting access with people becomes a whole lot easier because then it's not about trust.
That's right. And it's about access. And these are the halls of power. Let's also remember the most important part of that story to me is the part of the Schefter story that wasn't in the story, which was the fact that isn't he like an investor in a gambling, you know, in some
with the Kraft, know, Robert Kraft
thing with Bob Kraft. I mean, this is it's not unbelievable, because the very first thing I realized about working at ESPN, like before, when I was at the Washington Post deciding whether to come to ESPN, the conflicts of interest were very, very, very serious to me. I was like, how can you do your job? How can you write about stuff when your company is the rights holder to all of these plays? You're supposed to write about these people in our games. You know, their games are going to be on the network. And so, you know, some of the things that people told me was, well, you know, I've been working here for a dozen years and the editors have never once killed a story. That's not really the point, but this is the environment that you're in. So the thing that you remember first and foremost about working at ESPN, and we've all worked there, is ESPN is not a journalism company. ESPN is a television network that has a journalism wing.
And E is first. That's
exactly right.
E is first.
E is there for a reason.
And there's
right?
no J.
And there's no J in ESPN. And so what you're doing is you're trying to navigate a place that respects journalism, but it is not guided primarily by journalism. It is a sports networking program. It's a rights company, right? That is what this company is. And, you know, and those rights, I mean, nothing is more important than the NFL. So if you're Adam Schefter and you're in that position, there's no question that you need to be in those rooms. And I guarantee you, you know, there's all kinds of different things that are allowable. Like I remember one time we were at Wimbledon, and I remember what year it was. We were at Wimbledon, and the Babolat rep came over and just started handing out shoes to people. And I'm like, holy shit, and rackets. You know, newspapers, you can't accept a gift over $20. And so I went to the company and I said, what is our gift policy? It's like $500. It's like insane. Like you can accept airline tickets from sources at ESPN because the rules are different. It's just a different place. And I'm not like outing secrets. I mean, it's just how it is. So you realize then, what are you laughing at?
I said, there was a policy.
Exactly. There's a policy, period, right? There's a policy. I wanted to know, because I'm like, dude's handing me a $300 racket frame. I can't accept this. Can I accept this? And so the answer is, yes, you can accept it. But should you have accepted it? No. And I didn't accept it. So because of that, it's the rules are different. The journalistic rules are different. The standards are different. But to me, the most important thing isn't whether or not Adam Schefter is or is not a reputable journalist. What's important here is who is getting that dispensation. Is Colin Kaepernick getting stories sent to him? I don't think so, right? Was Maya Moore getting stories sent to her? I don't think so. Is Damaris Smith or Don Fear, you know, are they getting stories sent to them? I don't think so.
The implications remind me of the Ray Rice video, in that before that, everyone was like, well, I don't know, right? Like, what does domestic violence look like? You could think whatever you thought it might look like. Then you see the video and you're like, oh, that's what domestic violence can look like. You can say all I want over the last few years, like, yeah, there's this toxicity in football. Like, I see it at the college level. You see it up at the pros. I can't prove it to you. Oh, the John Gruden emails. There you go. This is what we're talking about. And in the same way, like with the Schefter email, and here I'm calling him Schefter, with the Schefter email, it's, do you want to know how things like the NWSL happen? Do you want to know how and why white men get repeatedly hired? Like, there you go. This is the evidence. We're actually showing it to you now. So it's not just like everyone's paranoid that the hierarchy and the patriarchy and the structure is built against them. Like, this is actually how this stuff works.
Yeah. And people don't care, though. People don't care because you showed them that when it came to cops. You know, it was like Rodney King. Well, what happened after the video? Like, they will find ways to justify what happened before the video got rolling. People are always going to find some way to justify their position. Right?
The fantasy in their head.
Exactly.
That fantasy in their head. They want this movie like, to go.
It's one of the reasons why we allow people to cheat on their taxes, because we don't want to pay our taxes either, right? It's like, so if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? So there's all kinds of different ways that people are going to use to justify it. When at the end of the day, the question does remain, right? This is what's happening. And if you have values, you have to have a problem with what's happening. Otherwise, you are an accomplice to this. And there are a lot of accomplices to this. whether you want to admit it or not. And whether, and that's why I kept saying, it's been a week. When you start connecting all the dots of this entire week, this thing is dirty. It's really dirty. It's corrupt. It's rooted in all the things, right? I mean, for whatever you want to say about Colin Kaepernick, the bottom line was, is that we have known for several years now that the entire weight of his industry and government came down on him. He had no real allies in that regard, and that the people who weren't, you know, people were going to use their influence to destroy this person. So that's valuable. You know, that's important to know. And it's way more important to expect, you know, to understand when you are surprised by systems. This is how they become systems. Systems are, what are systems? They're institutions made up of people, people like John Gruden. This is how they exist.
And I think this is passed down from generation to generation. I don't think it's a footnote here that John Gruden is in the NFL partly because his grandfather was a big name in the NFL and his brother was the coach under Bruce Allen. This is a family thing. This is passed down from generation. We talk about culture and what is this, you know, canceling, if you even want to call it that, because I don't agree with the idea that John Gruden is done in football. I don't, because this
I don't
agree
that he was canceled. Paid a price for what he did.
So I just think when we talk about John Gruden and how he is the scapegoat in this 650,000 emails, that he is going to be the sacrificial lamb, I don't think it's going to go anywhere because this is so fundamental and passed down, literally grandfathered in generationally, this culture. The Gruden family is one of the biggest families in the sport. And I don't think someone is going to, just because we get rid of John Gruden, that this is going to, taking away this rotten apple is not going to cure the rotten tree. And I think that is why the 650,000 emails have not been released.
Yeah, I don't think that's I don't think that's necessarily the intention, though. I think the intention, to me at least, is to look at this, you know, for what it is, and then, you know, do what you want with it, obviously. But let's not say it's not what it is. And what is was a close-up view at the foundation of another American institution that we are told is somehow virtuous that couldn't be farther from the truth.
Amin, Tom, Howard, thanks.
Friends, a lot has changed over the years, personally and across our airwaves. But one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. You know, for me personally, I recently bought a few six-packs of Miller Lite for my housewarming party, because that's one thing that's changed for me. I moved into a new house, and I brought some friends over, and we enjoyed the best light beer. Because Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. Less filling and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.